a rather gray day here in the Big Smoke.
Warm, though. It's warm.
Well, warmish. You know, it's not summer anymore, but
good golf weather.
You think?
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful golf weather. Yeah. Not very windy.
Have you been out? No.
I played twice last week.
You did?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What, did you lose my phone number? What is the story?
And
there?
Your name is?
Yeah, exactly. and for those that aren't aware, I'm Bob McCowan, and that's, I can't remember who he is. He's impersonating John Shannon. So we were chatting.
Good impersonation, by the way. Very good.
You're the only one that does a John Shannon impersonation.
Well, that's not true. There are thousands out there, Bob.
Oh, I'm sure there are not. what a time to be a sports fan.
Oh, I mean,
everything is going on now.
I need more TVs. I need more TVs.
Yeah, you have more TVs than anyone I know outside of Best Buy.
But I'll tell you what, though. I mean, last night there were, I think, 9 hockey games. The NBA with the doubleheader was fantastic, particularly the second game, the Laker-Warrior game. And then baseball starts at 5 o'clock. I mean, Bob, I haven't met my wife for the last couple of days, but it was fantastic.
Well, I'm sure she's not chagrined by that.
No.
Whether you are or not, but
no, but wow, it's and not only that, some of the stuff we're watching, you know, top of the ninth, bottom of the ninth, in the baseball playoffs, it's pretty dramatic stuff.
Oh, well, I did watch the top of the ninth inning and Houston rattle off. What'd they get, 7 in the top of the ninth?
Yeah.
And then the basketball, and I confess I was bopping around, as you probably were. I was out last night, but came home and started watching. And I turned on the Laker-Warrior game in the third, I think it was the third quarter, just at the point that Carmelo Anthony got fouled, goes to the foul line, and I actually saw something I have never, ever seen before.
Carmelo in an air ball or what?
No. You weren't watching then.
I didn't see that one. I was flipping.
So Carmelo gets 2 shots. Throws up the first. I think he made it. I don't really remember. And then his second shot, he takes the ball. He bounces it a few times, gets ready, does this, but doesn't let go of the ball. He actually took his full shot, but the ball stayed in his hand. And they called him for whatever, traveling. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know what the call is. I've never seen this play before.
I guess there's a free throw violation. I guess.
Sure.
Yeah.
Of some sort. But I guess never
you're right. You're not allowed to fake a free throw.
And that's essentially what he did.
Yeah.
And of course, everybody goes to the line and or into the key.
Right.
And there he is with the ball in his hand and he starts laughing. And at that point, I think the Lakers were up by about 7 or 8, something like that at the time.
Wow.
And from that point on, it went downhill for Los Angeles, and they wind up losing.
To tell you what, the Warriors, I couldn't stop watching in the fourth quarter. The Warriors were so impressive. And I just love the way Steve Kerr coaches.
He's near the top of the food chain.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. It's funny, I've always been a LeBron fan to some extent. Even in Miami, I was a LeBron fan.
Oh, sure, you have to be.
But I Steph Curry. Oh my goodness gracious! Andrew Wiggins hit a 3 in the fourth quarter to a key 3-pointer. You know, and I couldn't help think that they have done a good job of, and no Klay Thompson still, but getting closer. Getting closer. I hope they're in it because I really think that they are. They're a brand that you have to watch all the time to really.
They're
enjoy.
Easy
they're
to
fun.
Like. I think.
Yeah, they are. They are. They
and
really
the
are.
Lakers, meanwhile, with all their geezers, maybe the oldest team in the history of the NBA. It's possible.
Jerry West and Gail Goodrich were going to come off the bench at some point. I think.
Well, yeah, I'm waiting for Kareem and Magic and Worthy. And all those guys to show up. Cooper.
Yeah. By the way, the only other story last night in hockey was in St. Paul, where the Jets were leading 5-3. And then Minnesota came back and scored. It was 5-4, just over a minute to play. And the Jets score an empty net goal to go up 6-4. And Minnesota calls for a review and a player is offside on an empty net goal.
Hard to believe.
An empty net goal and ends up being 5-4. Wild scored with an empty net, 5-5, and they win in overtime. The Jets are snake bit right now.
Wow.
But that was just, that was crazy what happened. And you can bet our pal Paul Maurice was not very happy.
Oh, I can well imagine. And Minnesota's now 3-0. So all the, you know, those who identified Minnesota as a team that's coming, they sure look like they are.
Yeah, they are. There's no question. And here's the other interesting thing that I find, and maybe it's home, maybe it's the fans at home, is that home ice advantage is really something right now. Teams that start at home have had unbelievably strong records. Teams that are on the road are not very good at all. There's a boatload of teams that are 3-0, 4-0. Buffalo is undefeated, Bob. They haven't played on the road yet.
And well,
it's fascinating. And I think it's the crowds. I think the players are totally involved in their home team crowds.
We want to get to our guest. The only thing I glanced through the standings before we started here. Boston's only played one game.
Yeah.
How is
building availabilities?
Is that what it's about?
Yeah. Celtics. Yeah. They have to, when you share buildings with a team, they play tonight. They'll catch up.
But still,
yeah,
you know, you got a lot of teams have played four.
Well, the other issue is, and I know we got to get to Pierre, but the other issue is that with the two new rights holders in the United States, there are more national nights. And so what you're finding is that there are big nights. Tuesdays and Thursdays are a ton of games. And now Sundays and Wednesdays and Saturdays are all network nights. And so teams play in spurts now. They don't necessarily play every second night.
Right. Our guest today, the general manager of the Ottawa Senators, Pierre Dorion, will join us. Of course, we'll talk about the Brady Tkachuk situation now that he is signed, sealed, and delivered, and a bunch of other things to address with this still very young and maturing and maybe coming into their own Ottawa Senators. We'll see how good he thinks they might be. Pierre Dorion, when we come back after these messages. It's McCowan. It's Shannon on the program today, on the podcast and on Sirius XM. We are with the managing general of the Ottawa Senators. Pierre Dorion is with us. Good to see you. And thanks a lot for taking some time for us. We got to talk a little bit about the Brady Tkachuk signing, and I'm always more interested in the process than the result. And I have a bunch of questions. The basic one is, what did you perceive, or what was the issue that dragged this out as long as it did? Was there one thing?
I don't think there was really one thing, Bob. I think it was more multiple things. Obviously, term was a big thing for us. I think term was a big thing for them too, and trying to find not middle ground, but term that both parties would be happy with. And I think it was, at the end of the day, it was Brady that said, decided himself that he wanted to be here long term. I think obviously the AAV, trying to find comparables, Brady has a lot of comparables that aren't measurable as far as how he plays, the intangibles he brings, the leadership he brings. So I think those are two big factors. And then I think knowing that we were committing to signing him and other of our young players to longer term was probably another factor that Brady cared a lot about. So I think those are three of the factors that I think maybe made it drag out a bit.
When you talk about contract structure, what about signing bonuses? I noticed there are no signing bonuses in this deal. Would that have been a topic of discussion at some point?
We talked about it, but I think it's our organizational policy that we don't like to give out signing bonuses. There are a few teams that are like that. We just feel that it's something that we want to avoid. It's just a policy that we've in place in the past few years, and we'd like to stick to it.
Much has been made about the meeting in Belleville. Was that the catalyst, Pierre? And how did that come about?
Yeah, I think we did a lot of progress in Belleville, It was about two and a half, a bit more than 2.5 hours. We just seemed to really narrow down whether it was six, seven, or eight years. We really focused on those, that term at that point in time. And it just came about that morning. I think it was about 11:45. Watch our team practice. I knew the season was starting. Just picked up the phone and told Craig, do you want to meet just you and I? Do you want to meet with the group? We got to find a solution here. And Craig, you know, give him a lot of credit on this one. He says, no, Pierre, we got to find a way to get this done. So we just, you know, I had a few things that I had to get done that day. So we met at 6 p.m. We met till about just a bit after 8:30. We felt we'd made progress. We both, I think, wanted to sleep on it. You know, I obviously went to our owner because he signs off on, you know, probably second biggest contract. I think they talked to Brady and we made a lot of progress the next day too. And, you know, hit a few speed bumps along the way, but that was the, probably the, you know, the meeting that, even though we'd met several times and had multiple calls, that meeting really seemed to get a lot of momentum.
Bob, we should just mention that when Pierre's talking, he's talking about Craig Oster of Newport Sports.
Right.
So just in fairness to Craig and the work he did on this deal.
Well, I mean, what intrigues me, Pierre, here is the notion that you guys made significant progress in a face-to-face meeting. I'm intrigued by how often in the course of a negotiation, in a typical scenario, how often do you meet face-to-face and how much of this is telephone?
Most of it is telephone. It's a great question. We actually went down there early August. If I'm off, I apologize, but I believe it was second week of August. We spent a good full day down in, at the Newport offices. Peter McTavish, our assistant GM, Pierre McGuire, senior VP player development, went down there and we had what we felt were really productive meetings at that point in time. But then we seemed to hit a bit of a roadblock and had multiple calls. I'd probably tell you we talked almost every third or fourth day, second or third day. And then, but, you know, it's always who you negotiate with. I think we have a fairly good relationship with Newport. And sometimes we just felt, or I just felt on that Tuesday that we got to meet in person. We got to look face to face, be man to man, you know, and just get this done.
Well, and it's intriguing that by your own acknowledgement, that Belleville meeting probably laid the foundation, the real foundation for getting the deal done. While you didn't do it that day, it sounds like that face-to-face conversation was impactful. Did it change your position at all in the future of trying to have more face-to-face meetings with agents when contractual situations are at hand?
Again, it depends on the agent. Some guys you don't have that type of relationship with, so maybe a face-to-face is not as productive. But I think when you sit down with people in a room, I think it's not a lost art of negotiating, but I think people can hide sometimes behind a phone or behind a computer screen. But when you're talking with someone, you see their body language, you see how they feel about certain propositions, I think it says a lot.
Oh, I think
when you're negotiating with someone, I mean, in this cap world, and you had signed Thomas Chabot to an 8-year deal previously, you do have other young players coming up. Do you, in your negotiation, do you tell the agent, hey, listen, this is part of the puzzle, and does he care and does he listen?
Most agents only care about their own players. We're not going to dispute that. But obviously, we did. Obviously, we told him. Obviously, we just signed Drake Batherson earlier in the summer to a 6-year. And he's one of, I think he'll probably have the biggest breakthrough for us this year. He's one of our most highest offensive impact players. But obviously, we told him. We said, we got to sign Brady. But at a certain point in time, you have your client, Josh Norris, that we will have to sign. He's on the last year of his entry-level deal. After that, there's Tim Stützle. There's Shane Pinto that we think is going to have a bright future. Then there's arguably who I think is the best defenseman outside the NHL and Jake Sanderson. All guys that are going to have significant impact, whether you want to call them stars, whatever you want to call them, they're going to be good young players that are going to help us win. And you have to think about the cap. It's not about the payroll. It's got to think about, you know, doing certain gymnastics with the cap. And, you know, I alluded to that in our press conference that not all these young stars were going to be able to sign him to max term, whether it's 6, 7, or 8 years. Some you're going to have to do bridge deals just to fit them under your cap.
You mentioned Norris being with the same agency as Brady. When you're talking about Brady, I mean, he's the focus of attention. Do you divert and talk about Norris at all, or is that a separate conversation, maybe even with a separate agent in that office?
No, it's the same agent. It's Craig Oster, same agent. So on Belleville, what brought it up, I said, you know, a lot of the things that we're talking about Brady, obviously we're going to talk about Josh Norris. You know, they're different players. One's a center, one's a winger. Their impacts are different. But we brought it up that day. It was really the first time we brought it up. And I can tell you that we did the deal on Thursday. Friday morning, Craig called me and said, it's weird, we haven't talked today. Maybe we should get started on Norris. So I said, why don't we give ourselves maybe a week or two and talk to your client and see what he's thinking? Because some players don't mind doing contracts during their last year of deal, and other players want to put it off till the end of the year. Us, we don't really care. You know, we'll do whatever the player wants. It's always being respectful to players, because sometimes they don't want to have the little duck talking behind your head saying, oh, you're playing for a contract, my agent's talking to them tomorrow, I got to produce tonight. So some guys just want to wait till the end of the year.
So during the negotiation, more phone calls from DJ saying, when is he here, or Eugene, how much are we paying him?
Not even close. DJ, when is he here? Eugene is great. That like Eugene, you know, I remember I called him after a meeting in Belleville, and obviously on some negotiations, I'm going to update him more than others. Like on Drake Batherson, pretty much gave him a few updates and told him, okay, it's pretty much done. Here we go. And he said, okay, that's great. And obviously on Brady, I'm calling him from Belleville, and he said, you know, I said, Eugene, I think we made a lot of progress here. I think we're getting close to a good long-term contract. And he was good. He said, just get it done. Sleep on it, Pierre. You know, and then if you feel it's right, just get it done. He goes, it's a lot of money. I said, yeah, it's a lot of money. But, you know, he just wants what's best for a hockey team, and especially getting that type of term. But that question is the easiest one y'all probably get asked all day, every day, some days twice a day, especially as camp got closer and in camp. When's he going to be here? When can I play him? So DJ's, that's the one for sure.
Well, I want to bring up your owner, your boss, Eugene Melnyk, who has been on this program on numerous occasions. And he and I are, I don't know how you categorize a friendship, but we're friends. And we see each other and talk to each other occasionally, not about hockey, but just about other things. And I've known your owner for some period of time. He was, without question, public enemy number one in Ottawa for an extended period of time. I don't know, may still be, for all I know. But I'm intrigued by your perception of him. And I mean, I know he's your boss, so you're going to be careful in what you say. But there's a lot about this guy that is maybe misrepresented, but at least misunderstood. Tell me what your perspective of Eugene is.
Compassionate, a winner, cares a lot, a businessman, but someone who's got a big heart. Probably one of the best stories to define him. I hope I don't get in trouble by saying this, but probably won't. We were coming back. He wanted to see Belleville because we were talking about the prospects. So a few years ago, we went down to Belleville. I remember we're coming back. It's minus 40 outside. I got a flat tire.
Oh.
Okay. I'm outside trying to figure out how to change it. It's a European car, so I had no idea. I've changed flats many times. And it's Peter, myself, actually Eugene's daughter, and Eugene. And I'm out there, and Eugene says, Pierre, you're too important. You can't be on the side of the road. You're the GM of this team. And I think Peter's trying to push me in front of cars so he gets the job. So that tells you, like the compassion. And just another story, I like red wine. I don't know much about red wine. When we lost out, I think we won out and we finished, we picked third, you know, and we had two picks. We had two chances of being number one. I think Eugene saw how down I was. And I'm not going to tell you the bottle of wine he gave me, but he gave me probably one of the nicest gifts I've ever got. And this is after two or three years of really struggling, you know? So I think he cares. He understands what we did as far as being public enemy number one. I think after we signed Brady, he could probably run for mayor of Ottawa and win. That's how I think he's putting his money where his mouth is as far as, you know, signing our young players. And we started with Shabbat, and, you know, before that, even I'd say Colin White, not that he's a frontline player, but he's a good young player still. So, you know, we have a good relationship. We talk a lot. We talk, I wouldn't say we talk every day, but we definitely email, you know, every day. He cares a lot about this team, cares to see. Just when we made this decision to rebuild, we knew, you know, when you trade away superstars and stars, you're never going to be liked by the public. But I think people understand what we're trying to do is that was to have a team that could compete for the playoffs every year when the puck drops opening night.
How do you, so how in managing up, we all have to learn to manage up certain ways. Would it be fair to suggest that Brian Murray was the biggest influence on how you manage up?
Oh, without a doubt. Brian Murray's, I could talk to you about it for an hour, how great of a man Brian Murray was. For, put the hockey side, hockey part aside, pardon. As a human being, Brian probably, in all my years of working with him, probably got mad at me once or twice. He knew how to manage up, down. He knew how to talk to people. He was straightforward. He knew how to bend the truth a bit to make sure things got done. But just as a human being, like one of the things I enjoyed the most about Brian is that we'd go for lunch every day. When, you know, the team wasn't playing that day, we didn't have the pregame meal. We go for lunch every day. We talk about life. We talk hockey. I'd probably tell you 90% of the time, but we also talked about life. And you know what? I hope one day that people can give Brian Murray's due credit, because he should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame just for what he's done as far as building people.
You mentioned
I would suggest, Pierre, that, and this is not a reflection on you at all, that the Brian's passing had a tremendous negative effect on your franchise. I really believe that because of the influence he had on so many people at so many times.
Well, I think Brian definitely, his leaving himself, you know, obviously he passed away and he was still with the organization, definitely had an impact. I could go to Brian about anything on any day. I'll always remember a time where Brian was way more mad at the referees than I ever was or ever will probably be. And in first year's GM, I told Brian, like about halfway through the year, and I'd say, Brian, like the refs were so bad last night. How do I go about it? Like, I don't want to be complaining, or maybe in the first quarter of the year, I don't want to be the guy that phones the head referee every night. I don't want to be talking to Coley. And he just told me how to go about it, you know, and it's a life lesson that you don't realize. And I remember, I think we had a huge bad loss to St. Louis at some point in time during the year. I think it was a home loss. We just played terrible. And I came in the next morning and I was mad and, you know, I wanted the team to perform well. And he said, Pierre, you can't take every loss like that. You know, you got to realize that it's just a game. And he told me that a lot of times, Pierre, it's just a game. You know, I know you care, but it's just a game.
Pierre Dorion is with us, the GM of the Ottawa Senators. Take a quick break and come back with lots more questions, lots more things to discuss. Stick around. Back after this. Bob McCown, John Shannon with the GM of the Ottawa Senators, Pierre Dorion. We talked a bit about, well, you mentioned Josh Norris and Shane Pinto, your two prominent young centers. Do you feel you need a veteran in the middle? Do you think that would be significantly helpful to the organization and especially to Pinto and Norris being young guys?
Well, I think with the play of Chris Tierney so far this year, I would probably have to tell you no. We know that Colin White will be back at some point in time. Chris Tierney's played like the guy that led our team in scoring 2 years ago. So right now, we don't feel we have a need. Now, if we felt that we could be a cup-contending team, then the answer would be different. But at the same time, we have to realize that our job and DJ's job this year is to keep on developing these players and taking that next step and trying to win more games. So at the same time, you've got to last year, we felt the need to get one just to protect our younger centers. This year, I think with the evolution of some of our wingers taking on a bigger role, I think their protection and having a bit more experience on the back end, I think that they'll be fine. There'll be some rough nights, but right now I think that they'll be okay. Whatever slots, you know, at a certain point in time, a Chris Tierney could move up in the lineup to if a guy's struggling. So I think you got to look at those situations.
How do you feel about veteran presence and leadership? We hear a lot about it, about players who are acquired by organizations. And the GM talks about, well, I got him because we needed a veteran presence. We needed that leadership on the ice. And those of us who are not directly involved in the game, well, I'll only speak for myself. I don't question that, Pierre. I don't question the significance of it. But I also have to attest to the fact that I have a hard time understanding what that actually means. Try and explain it to me if you can.
I will. And I can tell you one thing. When you have a young team that has not won, a young team that has struggled in previous years, it's huge. You can't have any type of success. Leaders, what they do is they show you how to be pros. They show you how to practice, how to, you know, Ron Hainsey was one of the greatest guys I've seen here. Mm-hmm. And he just had a calming influence on the room. He wouldn't let the young guys get rattled by anything. And there are other guys you bring in for their toughness. There are other guys you bring in because you want to protect your younger players from putting them in situations where they will have no success. Leadership is, it's, when we did this rebuild, I studied a lot of teams that were done rebuilds and mm-hmm. some teams that had success and teams that had not success. I'm not going to go through them all, but to me, it was important to understand that sometimes you don't always go and get the best player. Where we were the past years, getting good character people was so important for the development of the Tkachuks, the Norris. Pinto wasn't as much, but the Shabbats, getting those guys is key. And whoever says that leaders and veteran players is not important probably has never won.
Is it more important as a defenseman? A leader to be a defenseman than a forward? Or do you
A good question, because the one thing, it's way tougher to step in the NHL and play defense than play as a forward.
Sure.
Because you're the last line of defense. Your mistakes are more prone to be seen, more prone to be examined, more prone to be analyzed compared to a forward where if you don't pick up your guy or if you're not in the right route defensively, it's not the big deal. But defense is way tougher. I think having leaders on your back end can calm everything down.
Even for the guys up front. Sorry, John.
Yeah. No, yes. The leadership thing's an interesting one, because I have been nothing but impressed with Brady Tkachuk and what he does off the ice with people and interaction with kids. It's amazing. During the negotiation, was there ever a concern that might, if it went longer, it would be eroding what he was to his teammates?
No, not at all. If you know Brady, we've been fortunate to be around Brady for the last 3 years. You just as how wholesome he is, how he cares about people, how he approaches the game. I always tell a story, and I think I've said this before. I remember, I forget if it was the first year or the second year, we were walking out. We played the last game at home before Christmas, or last game here before Christmas. And by accident, I was just following him. He shook every person, security guard's hand on the way out, wishing them a Merry Christmas. Meant it. You know, some guys just shake their hands and they walk. And you could tell that this guy is just, thank God we have him. You know, because he's a great hockey player, but you can tell that he's even a better human being. Like, Keith and Chantal did a great job raising him. I can tell you that.
So, you know, you drafted him at a certain point, Pinto, Batherson, all these guys. You've done all of this, Pierre, with the smallest front office staff in the National Hockey League. Some other people deserve some credit for what has gone on. But how have you done it with such a small staff? Because there's lots of teams with a lot more money, with a lot more staff that haven't drafted as well as you have.
Well, I think you have to empower your scouts. I think, you know, obviously coming from that background, I realized that, you know, a GM going out and seeing a guy once is not going to really matter. They know we're a small staff. When you're small, you know your opinion matters. You know you're going to have an impact. Sometimes when you have a twice the size, maybe your opinion doesn't matter. Maybe you're not listened to as much in the meetings. Maybe the value of your opinions, it doesn't go far. Well, with our staff, especially on the amateur scouting staff, we're able to do that. As far as having a small management staff, that's by choice. You know, it's we weren't big when Brian was here, and it just, you feel that everyone has a voice. Everyone has a say in all the proceedings, whether it's trades, free agents, everything that goes on. You know, the coach has a say, obviously, in those things. But I think your opinions matter.
So the one person you have added is Pierre Maguire.
Yes.
How your interaction with Pierre? How did that come about? And how do you see his role?
Well, Pierre's role is someone who can definitely help us on the with the NHL players. Obviously, Pierre's seen a lot of NHL games over the past few years. He's someone that knows the NHL players. He can definitely help us when it comes to talking to, or not talking to, but, you know, whether it's trades. Obviously, he's got really good contacts at the college level. So if we're going to recruit college free agency, he's someone that I can bounce a lot of ideas off, really feel comfortable just talking to him about, you know, the game of hockey. He's been a great addition. When Brian left, I talked to Eugene about finding the right person, and so far it's been a great marriage as far as, you know, being in part of our team.
When you are, you know, you talked about having a small staff. How often do you go off the board? How often? I mean, there's a consensus every year, generally speaking, these are the best players, and this is the order in which they probably should be drafted, depending upon the needs of the individual teams. How often would you say, no, we're not going to go that way? We're not going to go the way people think we're going to go. Or do you tend to be more of a centralist and say, you know, we're probably going to play it a little safe? Do you categorize yourself in one or the other?
No, just when it comes to scouting, scouting is an art form. There's no exact science. So to me, it's more of a, my answer is more of a hybrid. It's however we feel about the certain players. One thing is I've always told our guys, is look at a guy's strength. Don't look at his weaknesses. Look at what the guy brings to the table. I think that's very important when you scout, that you don't look at a guy's weaknesses, because most weaknesses can be improved upon. So look at what the guy brings. But as far as being more centralist or going more off the board, we just look at the best players. But the one thing I also tell them is, don't worry about what anyone else says. We pay you to give your opinions. You give your opinions on players. Not worried about what anyone else says about the players.
So, Pierre, is it easier to draft a player or sign a free agent?
That's a good question. I think signing free agents, it depends what kind of market you are, where you are as a team. I think it can be attractive for some players to play in markets where you get more attention, while some players want certain, they don't want to be bothered, you know, with the day-to-day life of playing in Canada. Drafting is always difficult. You're looking at 17 and 18 year olds, you're projecting what they'll be in 3 or 4 years time. So I think both have their difficult parts. I prefer drafting than trying to attract free agents, but at some point in time as a team, you have to really focus on free agents if you think you're close.
And the reason I ask, I'm sorry to be so cryptic, is your biggest free agent signing has been Matt Murray. And it's been a bit of a roller coaster with Matt. Where's your confidence in him and what he can do for this organization?
Confidence is very high right now. Last year, we're not gonna sugarcoat it. He didn't have the greatest year. I think from the start, he started off good, then hit a wall, and I definitely didn't play up to his level. I think when we made the goalie change, and sometimes it's not on the goalie coach, it's just some goalies perform better with certain goalie coaches. And once Zach Burke came in, I saw the Matt Murray that won two cups. I don't know if he'll be at that level this year, but I can tell you one thing, I feel very confident with Matt Murray as our goaltender.
Last area of concern for me, at least here, Pierre, and that is the captaincy. And I'm John will tell you that I talk about it with some regularity, trying to understand the importance of the captaincy and the process of making that decision. How important is it? I mean, is it something that's very high on your priority list and the organization's priority list? Because leadership can come without a C on the uniform. We all know that. So tell me how important is it to you?
Well, your point is great, Bob. Leadership can definitely come without a C on the sweater, but I think we're the main sport in Canada. We're one of the seven, or how many franchises there is in Canada as far as teams. So for us, for me anyways, personally, I feel the captain is a reflection of the team. He represents the team in the community. He's the voice of the players, whether it's to the coaching staff. More, it's a leadership group, but the captain has a final say to the GM, to the owner. So to me, it says a lot when you're a captain. And it's always, I think in the past, what I've seen or what I've learned or talking to other guys, teams have rushed into sometimes naming their captain. And we felt that this captain, whoever that might be, we're not going to rush into naming it. We're going to make sure it's the right person.
So is it fair to suggest you may go this season without a captain?
No, we'll have one. I think we've gone long enough. I think at this point in time, we've gone enough years without a captain. I think it's with this group where we are as a team, where we're progressing to, I think it's time to name a captain.
Who gets involved in that decision-making process? I assume you talk to various people, but I mean, ultimately it's, I guess, your call, but who are the key players in finally making that decision, Pierre?
I would say the three key players are DJ Smith, Pierre Dorion, Eugene Melnyk. I think the owner, because it's a Canadian team, it's the face of the franchise, I honestly believe that the owner should be involved. And I think the three of us, in talking to many people within our organization, obviously Eugene's not here on a day-to-day basis, but obviously I think he trusts what DJ and I tell him, are the people involved in making this decision.
And if the three of you don't agree, who wins?
The owner.
rhetorical question.
Gotta ask, you know. It's not that I didn't know the answer, but listen, pretty decent start. Yeah, your team is off to, you've got a really interesting young team. I think you've got to be very optimistic about what lies ahead for the Ottawa Senators. You know, there's a playoff opportunity for you there, I'm sure you think, this year, but even if that doesn't materialize, based on what we saw at the end of last year and what we know about this young group, there's a bright future ahead. We'll keep our fingers crossed. It's good of you to take time for us. We always appreciate it. All the best to you. Thanks, Pierre.
Perfect. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, John.
Pierre Dorion, the general manager of the Ottawa Senators. We'll come back after these messages. And we're back. It's McCowan and Shannon, and our thanks to Pierre Dorion, the GM of the Ottawa Senators, for joining us.
I've known Pierre a long time. And he's a much happier person these days than he has been in the previous years.
Well, if you hang up more W's than L's, then you're going to be happy in his job. I mean, it's as simple as that. But he has other, I mean, don't you think, I mean, this is a team that has promise. You don't know whether it's going to materialize. The level of the players that they have in their organization, Tkachuk aside, perhaps, well, no, mm-hmm. definitely, not at the same projected level as, say, the Toronto Maple Leafs top four. But then again, you don't know. And they have bunches of them. Yeah. Like, they got 8 or 10 guys that I see on that roster that could be really good players.
Well, Alan, and as Pierre alluded to, one of the best of them isn't even on the roster yet. He's still at North Dakota, and Jake Sanderson. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, the promises that Eugene made, I think 3 years ago at a Hockey Hall of Fame event, where he said, listen, we're going to be a contender in 3 years, and we're going to show potential in 3 years, has really come true. And it speaks to working through the draft. It cost a lot of angst in the Ottawa Valley and a lot of pressure. And how many fire Melnick or Melnick out billboards were there at one point? But it's starting to pay off. The other thing I would say, Bob, is I don't think we can measure what signing Brady Tkachuk to 7 years means beyond the ice. You know, their core now, Shabbat and Tkachuk particularly, are set for the next 7 years.
Yeah.
And you know, there we talked to Pierre about signing free agents. They have enough space in the next few years to be able to get into that world if they're a contender, you know, if they're a winner. People want to go and play and win. And there's I think the fact that a guy like Brady Tkachuk wanted to stay for 7 years speaks volumes to what is going on with the franchise on and off the ice. I really do.
Well, one of the names that's come up, and it's in pure speculation, and we're probably a long way away from any resolution on this, if there is going to be, is Claude Giroux in Philadelphia. And the fact that he's a free agent at the end of the year, and he lives in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And he can play center, and he's a veteran. And I sort of addressed this question indirectly with Pierre.
Yeah. Well, if you brought his name up, he would have been tampering. So you couldn't bring his name up, right?
Well, no, but I mean, you and I can talk about it because we can't get charged with tampering. Does he make any sense even as a rental? Because he could be a rental, you know?
Yeah.
Although he makes his home in Ottawa, you know, his off season, he lives in the Ottawa area. So at least you have a shot, right?
I suppose so. And it ends up going how he would fit into the chemistry of the team. You know, here's the interesting thing about Claude Giroux. I don't know Claude Giroux, but his numbers are impressive. But what has the teams he's been on, what have they done?
No, you're right.
And so do you want, I mean, I want winners. And that's not to knock Claude Giroux. He's been on an Olympic team. But I'll tell you what, he doesn't fit into my landscape in Ottawa.
No.
No, he doesn't. But when you say, well, listen, he lives in Ottawa, wants to stay in Ottawa or wants to potentially play in Ottawa, I think you'd have to, as a team, have the discussion. But my question is, maybe it's a little harsh, is, yeah, but what's he won? What has he done that's won?
All right.
Great numbers. Great numbers.
I buy that. But, you know, the only team that's won the last 2 years is Tampa Bay, and I don't see any of their centers leaving at any time soon. So,
I think you're under the assumption that you have to have a veteran center, a veteran forward in there. And I think there are probably ways. It's interesting. When you look at teams over the years, even the dynastic ones that you and I both love, Montreal, Islanders and Oilers, there was a veteran player. It wasn't necessarily a center that created a little bit. So I'm not necessarily suggesting that it has to be a single position. You know, all of those teams found veteran players available. Maybe they played wing. Maybe they were on the blue line. So I wouldn't just harness myself to suggesting it has to be a centerman.
Well, what would you? Okay, so let me just, you know, I don't want to dwell on this topic, but because it's purely hypothetical. How important do you think Jason Spezza has been to the Toronto Maple Leafs? Like, what has his contribution actually been?
I think it's been more than people realize. I think that he's been a calming influence in the dressing room. I think that he's a leader on so many different ways, not just for the Maple Leafs, but as a veteran player with the Players Association. I think he's helped. I think he's calmed a lot of nerves inside.
I agree.
That room. And if... I mean, now, Jason Spezza is not going back to Ottawa, but if you could find somebody of his pedigree that said I can, you know, that he can play the game, then perhaps Jason Spezza is that type of guy.
Well, I mean, you say Jason Spezza is not going back to Ottawa.
He's already told the world that if the Maple Leafs put him on waivers ever,
he'll retire.
And he gets claimed, he'll retire. So yeah. He wants to play in one town. He wants to play in his hometown, and that's it.
No, I get it. But he's also, what, 38, 39 years old?
He's older than dirt. He's older than dirt. Yeah.
Well, you know, and his contribution will be limited. His real contribution is that level of experience and ability to guide young players. Not 365 days a year, but every once in a while when they hit a roadblock of some sort, either with their game or emotionally.
That's true. You know that, but and whether the Senators are ready to spend some money on that veteran, I got that sense from Pierre that he wasn't necessarily at the point where he thought they were ready for it. But as he said, if they were in the position of being a contender, that might change the discussion.
So last point from me. Is this Ottawa team good enough to make the playoffs? Do they have a shot?
Not yet. No. When you consider, I think we have to give two positions in this division to Tampa and Florida. Not necessarily. Florida might be better than Tampa right now. Then you've got Boston and Toronto. And, you know, I don't think there are five teams coming out of the Atlantic Division and only three teams coming out of the Metropolitan Division. So when you think of where are the Islanders, they're going to be better. They won what big last night. Washington's going to be good. Where is Pittsburgh? You know, right now, no Malkin Crosby, but they're going to be back soon. You know, where's the rest of it is an interesting story. I think Ottawa will tease for a while and just to finish the season out of the playoffs, but showing potential for being a playoff contender next year.
The Stanley Cup finalists from last year, the Montreal Canadiens, are 0-4. Oof. How shocked.
0-4, Bob. Shocked. And not only that, more shocked that they've scored three goals in four games. Goals in four games, Bob.
I verbalized it by saying they've looked horrible.
Yeah.
Other than that one game against the Maple Leafs where they were in it, they just,
that was adrenaline. I firmly believe that was adrenaline.
Are you shocked by this, or is this only verification that the Montreal Canadiens last year were, and Habs fans, forgive me, nothing more than a fluke?
Well, and we've talked about it more in baseball about how teams can get streaky and momentum. That's what we saw with Montreal last year at the right time. They got streaky. They had momentum. Carey Price was good. Carey Price, Shea Weber was playing very good. Philip Deneau was playing very good. Corey Perry was playing very good. None of those four people are on the roster right now, and only two of them potentially can be on the roster. And Shea Weber's not coming back this season, and we just hope and pray that Carey Price is okay at a certain point this season. They have a ton of holes, and I don't know how they get out of it, Bob. I do not know how they get out of it at this point.
About 2 minutes or less, the Toronto Raptors commence their season tonight, I think against Washington.
Yes, sir.
And there is no real level of optimism or anticipation of what this team will be this year. If they are good enough to make the playoffs, I think everybody will be pleasantly surprised. The thing that I'm looking for is this organization by design has decided to go very untraditionally in terms of the players that they have acquired, the size that they have acquired. They're going to play really without a legitimate center. They got a whole bunch of guys that do a whole bunch of things. But the question is, are they going to be able to do enough on a given night to be able to win games? What do you think?
Well, if this team does get to the playoffs, it will be Nick Nurse's greatest coaching accomplishment of his career. The other thing is, I think the pressure's on that core of three. And I have 100% confidence in Van Vliet. I have 90% in Siakam. And I have about 40 in Ananobi. I don't know. I don't see it for out of him. I'd like to be wrong, but and as we talked with Bob Ryan yesterday, the Raptors aren't on anyone's radar.
No, they and shouldn't be. And it will be very intriguing, though, to see how this collection performs, specifically if for no other reason than the untraditional way that Masai has gone about putting this this package together. Mm-hmm. And we'll begin to see how that unfolds this evening. Again, our thanks to Pierre Dorion for joining us. That'll do it for us. We'll catch you again, same time, same place tomorrow. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, goodbye, everybody.